We have been studying Daniel, and we will, Lord willing, soon finish it up in a week or two. Next week, however, we won't be doing this class because we'll have a young man coming to look at our associate position, and he'll be teaching class. He's going to be covering the relationship between works and faith, and then during the assembly, worship assembly, he's going to be preaching on why he's a member of the Church of Christ, two topics we've assigned him. So that's what next Sunday will be about. So we'll just extend our class on out. There's no great demand that we finish at a certain time, so we can just go as long as we want and then start something new. I like that. Freedom. Freedom. This is a time for freedom, isn't it? We're celebrating that. Also, Lord willing, today is, next Wednesday, the 10th, I'm going to have surgery on this ear. They're going to try to repair the eardrum, and they say, we think you're going to get a lot of your hearing back, which is one of the reasons I've not checked in too diligently to hearing aids, because the hope was that I would get some of that back, and that would hopefully be a waste. So I would ask you to pray for me in that regard. They also said that once that's done, I'll be out for a week. I don't really know why. I guess I come to work and listen to loud rock and roll or something like that. It's just on the way in the car and going home that I do that. But anyway, so please keep me in mind in that regard that I get that hearing back. It's for those of you that have hearing problems, you understand. And now I understand a little more about the idea. You go into a room and you realize I shouldn't be in this room because this is a place I can't hear anything. And you want to go somewhere else, and you're trying to have a conversation, and you're just looking and nodding like you understand and hear, and you don't know, have a clue. So,
and your daughter
looks over at you and says,
"That's not what they were saying."
Well, I'll have to have Brandy come over and do that for me. So, by the way. Back regarding class, John's got worksheets. Anybody need a worksheet? He's got some more to hand. He'll be willing to. Okay, Jane needs one. Anybody else? We've got several. Got plenty. We're in an We're in an interesting chapter this morning. Not that the others have not been interesting, but Daniel chapter 9. Gabriel comes to give Daniel insight and understanding into the future, just as God has been giving him visions and also helping him interpret other people's visions. And all these visions are signs of what's coming about the kingdom, about God's establishment of his kingdom in the midst of the kingdoms of the world. And that's what this is all about. As we begin, just by way of kind of review, if Hal will throw up those slides. That's a great song right there. Song of praise. It's coming. I know it's coming. We talked about Antiochus Epiphanes. We started, of course, with the kingdom of Babylon and their empire, and this map will show you that. And right after Babylon, according not simply to the dream, but to history, what was the next nation to arise? Who took over the Babylonian empire? Medes and the Persians. So there's the extent of the Medo-Persian Empire. Last week, we read about the dream of the goat with the two horns, or not the ram with the two horns and the goat with one horn that rammed into the ram. Seemed like it might have ought to been the other way around, so you could have the ram ram into the goat. But no, there was a ram with two horns, and one horn was a little longer. That was the Medo-Persians, because the Persian side was stronger. The goat, who's the goat represent? The kingdom of Greece. And the goat had one horn, and that one horn represented Alexander the Great, who was leading Greece. And he rammed into the goat. No, he rammed into the ram. I can't get these ramming things straight here. And the goat took over, and there is the Grecian Empire as it extended out into India. So, oh, by the way, there, do you see Susa in the red? That's that's where it was mentioned that the goat was standing, so, or the ram was standing. I gotta get my animals straight. And there's the extent of the Greek Empire. Now here, remember we talked about Antiochus Epiphanes and the way the temple would be desecrated and pigs would be offered, or a pig at least would be offered on God's altar. This is the work of Antiochus Epiphanes, a Greek ruler. He's the one who so inflamed the Jews that the Maccabean revolt started, and that's what got that going back in the day. And by the way, they just uncovered this coin recently, and it depicts Antiochus IV Epiphanes. So just a little bit of history regarding what we're looking at. Isn't it fascinating? We're reading the Bible, and so many people say, oh, that Bible, people have rewritten that, and it's all made up, and there's nothing historical about it. It's just myth and legend, a bunch of gobbledygook. But everything in history is bearing out that what we are reading are the words of truth and always have been the words of truth and have not been changed since their inception. So that's what we're looking at here in the book of Daniel. All right. Thank you, Hal. That's all for the slides this morning. All right. Let's look at our review quiz. Everybody got a copy? Review quiz for Daniel over lesson 10. In Daniel 8, Daniel first sees a blank with two horns. A ram with two horns. All right. I would hope you would know that by now anyway. It represents the kingdom of the Medes and Persians. Then Daniel sees a blank with blank horn. A goat with one horn representing the kingdom of Greece. The horn represents Alexander. When the blank wins over the blank, goat wins over the ram, indicating that the blanks will win over the Greeks will win over the Medes and Persians. Number four, then the one horn is broken and blank horns come up. Four. So what happened in history that parallels? Alexander died at a relatively young age, and when he died, his fortune, his empire, massive empire, was separated out between four of his generals. So we're talking about four generals who became kings over those empires. And that's the next part, representing blank blank, which would be four kings, among whom the kingdom would be divided. Number five, from one of these horns comes a blank blank, a small horn, which represents a king who will blank the Jews. And you could put in persecute. That was Antiochus Epiphanes. And that's what you put in the last blank. Antiochus Epiphanes. I should have left the picture up there so you'd see how to spell it. And you could draw his face in there. So if you can't spell, just draw his face. People that are able to draw things like that astound me. I have no ability to draw, but folks that do, it's amazing. Aren't you glad we've all got different talents and abilities? I am. I appreciate people who can play music. All right. Let's read chapter 9. And I'm going to need five readers. Let's separate this out into five sections. I need somebody for chapter 9, verses 1 through 6. Who would like to read the first? All right, Judy, 1 through 6. 7 to 14. Who wants to read 7 to 14? Anybody? Everybody's looking to see what the big names are. All right, Janie. Then the third section is 15 to 19. Who'd like to read that? All right, I see a hand in the back. That's Rich. 20 to 23. Oh, there's the short one. Larry's grabbing the short one. And I'll wrap it up with 24 to 27. All right, let's read Daniel chapter 9.
In the first year, Darius, the son of Ahasuerus of Midian, descent. over the kingdom of the Chaldeans. In the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, observed in the books of the number of years, which was recorded as the word of the Lord to Jeremiah the prophet for the completion of the desolations of Jerusalem, namely 70 years. So I gave my attention to the Lord God to seek him by prayer and supplications with fasting, sackcloth, and ashes. I prayed to the Lord my God and confessed and said, "Alas, O Lord, the great and awesome God who keeps his covenant and loving kindness for those who love him and keeps his commandments, we have sinned, committed iniquity, acted wickedly, and rebelled, even turning aside from your commandments and ordinances. Moreover, we have not listened to your servants, the prophets, who spoke in your name to our kings, our princes, our fathers, and all the people of the land.
To you, O Lord, belongs righteousness, but to us, hope and shame, as at this day to the men of Judah, to the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and to all Israel, those who are near and those who are far away in all the lands to which you have driven them, because of the treachery that they have committed against you. To us, O Lord, belongs open shame, to our kings, to our princes, and to our fathers, because we have sinned against you. To the Lord our God belong mercy and forgiveness, for we have rebelled against him and have not obeyed the voice of the Lord our God and walked in his ways, which he set before us by his servants and prophets. All Israel has transgressed your law and turned aside, refusing to obey your voice. And the curse and oath that are written in the law of Moses, the servant of God, have been poured out upon us because we have sinned against him. He has confirmed his words, which he spoke against us and against our rulers who ruled us, by bringing upon us a great calamity. For under the whole heaven there has not been done anything like what has been done against Israel. As it is written in the law of Moses, all this calamity has come upon us, yet we have not entreated the favor of the Lord our God, turning from our iniquities and gaining insight by the truth. Therefore, the Lord has threatened the calamity and has brought it upon us, for the Lord our God is righteous in all the works that he has done, and we have not obeyed his law.
And now, O Lord our God, who have brought your people out of the land of Egypt with a mighty hand and have made a name for yourself, as it is this day, we have sinned. We have been wicked. O Lord, in accordance with all your righteous acts, let now your anger and your wrath turn away from your city, Jerusalem, your holy mountain, for because of our sins and our iniquities, the iniquities of our fathers, Jerusalem and your people have become a reproach to all those around us. So now, our God, listen to the prayers of your servant and his supplications. And for your sake, O Lord, let your face shine on your desolate sanctuary. O my God, incline your ear and hear. Open your eyes and see our desolations and the city which is called by your name. For we are not presenting our supplications before you on account of any merits of our own, but on account of your great compassion. O Lord, hear. O Lord, forgive. O Lord, listen and take action. For your own sake, O my God, do not delay, because your city and your people are called by your name. Gabriel brings an answer.
Now, I
Verse 24. 70 weeks have been decreed for your people and your holy city to finish the transgression, to make an end of sin, to make atonement for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy place. So you are to know and discern that from the issuing of the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah, the Prince, there will be 7 weeks, and 62 weeks it will be built again with plaza and moat, even in times of distress. And then, after the 62 weeks, the Messiah will be cut off and have nothing. And the people of the Prince who is to come will destroy the city and the sanctuary, and its end will come with a flood. Even to the end, there will be war. Desolations are determined. And he will make a firm covenant with many for 1 week. But in the middle of the week, he will put a stop to sacrifice and grain offering, and on the wing of abominations will come one who makes desolate, even until a complete destruction, one that is decreed, is poured out on the one who makes desolate. All right. That's quite a pronunciation by Gabriel to Daniel. And remember, none of these prophecies are for Daniel in the sense that they're for his benefit. He's receiving these prophecies for future generations and now for us, so we can look at what he wrote long before it happened and say, God knew, God planned, God fulfilled. That's what this is all about. Just like Peter said, that those prophets of old were not interpreting or not receiving those prophecies for themselves. They were not for themselves, but they were for those who would come in the future. And then Peter said something very interesting about that. He said, even angels long to look into this. And we might be in our minds thinking, well, we're just talking about the establishment of the kingdom. We're not really talking about God's salvation. But in the establishment of the kingdom, there is salvation. That's what it's all about. It's all the same thing. It's all part of the same thing. All right, let's go to our worksheet then. Fill in the blanks. Everybody got a worksheet? All right, here we are. The story begins in what is probably, what would the year be? Story begins in what is probably, and where did I write that down? 538. This year. 538, yes, because we talked about that last week. 538 was still under the time, or just after the time of the Babylonians and into the time of Cyrus or Darius. And so 538 BC. That's 538 years before Christ as we count it. And that's a little fluid as well, but it's generally accurate. All right, the occasion. Daniel has been reading from the writings of what prophet? Actually, Jeremiah. Moses will come into it, but he's been reading from Jeremiah because he's reading specifically about the 70-year exile. Captivity, yes. Which says that the captivity of the Jews in Babylon will last for 70 years. Daniel and others have now been in Babylon for 68 years, about 68 years. Remember, the deportations began at 606, and there were two more after that. So, Daniel's prayer. Daniel begins his prayer by affirming that God is blank, God is great, and that the Jews are sinners, not great. Sinners. If you read Daniel's prayer, you could almost lift that off the page of chapter 10 Take it to Nehemiah, the book of Nehemiah, and overlay that two or three times in Nehemiah. Nehemiah prays much the same prayer. These are righteous men, godly men, who are saying, we really messed up. You are the great and holy God, and we are evil and sinners, and all of this has come upon us because of our sin. You're righteous in judging us. Same ideas in Daniel's prayer and in Nehemiah's prayer and in the prayers of others. Should be in our prayers as well. All right, we're still in number two. Daniel also seems to refer to the book of, and you could put Deuteronomy there. This is the writings of Moses, where he speaks of the curses on the people if they disobey God. Daniel requests that God will turn his blank away from blank, turn his wrath away from Jerusalem. That's what Daniel prays. So the Jews could then return. He reasons with God that this will show his blank, his mercy. This will show your mercy. And that the return would be good for the name of God. All of this is to bring about God's glory. Number three, Gabriel's message. An angel named Gabriel came to say that Daniel's prayer had been heard because he was highly esteemed. Highly esteemed. When you read Ezekiel, I believe it's chapter 14, Ezekiel is saying, and by the way, what was Ezekiel's work? Where was he? Ezekiel was a prophet sent to be among the exiles. So he's among the exiles in Babylon. And at a couple of points, he says, even if Noah, Job, and Daniel were there, it would not delay punishment. So he's holding up these three men as three of the finest examples of righteousness in humanity. Not in Judaism, because was Noah a Jew? He was long before Abraham. So Noah, Job, by the way, where does Job fit into the chronology of the scriptures? Probably before the law, because he acts as a priest in the end of the book. There's no mention of Judaism or the law or priesthood throughout the book of Job. And in the end of Job, God says, Job, you wait, and these three friends of yours who've been criticizing you this whole time, I'm going to have them bring sacrifices to you. You'll offer these sacrifices for them and petition me on behalf of them. And so that's how that works. So Ezekiel's going back through inspiration, and he's bringing up two men who weren't even under the Jewish covenant, and then he brings them Daniel and uses these three men as examples of great righteousness and faith. And so he says that Daniel is highly esteemed. When Gabriel comes to him, he is highly esteemed. Did I even tell you that that's what to put in the blank? I did. Okay. Good. Still in number three, down at the end of it, he says he has come to give Daniel blank and blank insight and understanding. What is insight? What does it sound like it is? It's when you see into something. You see in. It used to be an old country song. I just thought of it. I hate it when things come to me like this, because sometimes they come to me and I bring them up and I wish I hadn't done that. But on the outside looking in. Any of you old timers remember who sang that? On the outside looking in. This is kind of where Daniel is. And Gabriel says, I'm going to give you some insight. Here, come to this window. Let me show you what's going to happen. There's going to be 70 weeks. And you know what the 70 weeks are. And then he goes on from there. And then he gives him understanding. That's what he's been doing all along. God has been giving him insight and understanding. Gives him dreams that need to be interpreted, need to be understood. And in the interpretation, God gives Daniel understanding. We, however, from this perspective, looking back on the history that's fulfilled, we also have understanding. It was given to Daniel looking ahead. He only knew by what was revealed to him what was coming down the pike. But now we can look back and we can see what happened and how God has fulfilled his will perfectly in everything he ever promised. Number four, the response to Daniel's prayer. There will be a period of 77s or 70 weeks decreed on Jerusalem. By the end of this period of time, the following will be accomplished. Number one, these 70 weeks are to finish transgressions. You can find that in the text. It's going to finish transgressions. You can go down to verse 24 of chapter 9 and follow this right along. 70 weeks are going to finish transgressions. 70 weeks are going to put an end to sin. And we'll talk about all this after we get the blanks filled in. To blank for wickedness. To atone for wickedness. To bring in everlasting righteousness. To seal up blank and prophecy, vision and prophecy. Number six, to blank the most blank. To anoint the most holy. And in your text of scripture, does it say place? They're in verse 24. The most holy, if it says place, does it look different than the other words? It's italicized. That's because they don't know. They're thinking that's what it's talking about. Him, the most anoint the most holy place, but it's not necessarily place. Just going to anoint the most holy. What could that be? Well, only God knows. But there's something holy, and it's not just holy. It's the most holy. And it's, as we would say in Oklahoma, it's fixing to be anointed. And that's what this is all about. All right, after six, three lines there. It says, all of these are connected with the work of the Messiah. Messiah. M-E-S-S-I-A-H. What language does the word Messiah come from? I should know this. I keep harping on this so many times. I think people are going to yell at me for talking about this all the time. Messiah is from the Hebrew language. What is the Greek equivalent of Messiah? Christ. What do both words mean? Anointed of God. Okay. Write that on your arm or something. That's good stuff. That's important stuff. The prophecy then will be about the blank of Jerusalem, future, the future of Jerusalem, which includes the coming to the city of the blank blank. And there you would put, as it is in the text, anointed one. Coming of the Anointed One. Now, what's Daniel getting a view of? From the time I sent you into captivity, there's going to be 77s. The number 7 in Hebrew numerology was very significant. It meant a time of completion. It's thought that it is the combination of the number 4, which is the number for the earth, the four winds, the four directions, and the number 3, which is God's number. So it's man and God together working as it was supposed to be back in the garden. Complete. That's the way it's supposed to be. The number 7 is a number for perfect completion. 10 is another one. 12 is another one. They just have different contexts. But this one is the 7. And so he's talking about, I'm bringing about a time of completion. In other words, I'm going to wrap things up. What was the whole point of God calling Abraham in the first place and promising him a son? What was the plan? Going to bring his son into the world. I'm sending my son. Why am I sending my son? I'm sending my son to save the world. I'm going to bless the whole world through my son. But I'm going to send him into the world through a nation. And so he calls Abraham. He doesn't look around, which nation can I choose? No, which man can I choose? I'm going to pick the most faithful man I can put my hand on, and that is Abraham. And he chose Abraham and called him. How old was Abraham when God called him? He was 75. How many children did he have? None. God said, I'm going to give you a son. What did Sarah do? Right. Because she was 65. And then a couple years later, they had a son. Wait a minute. How many were those couple years? 25 years. How old would Abraham have been? 100 years old. This is how God works all the time. He does the kinds of things that you don't expect. And he's always proving, you're going to know that I'm God. You're going to know that I'm God. You read through the prophets, and that's a phrase you'll see repeated. You're going to know that I'm God. That is a question that Pharaoh asked. Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice? And then what did God do for the rest of what we read but prove to Pharaoh, I am God, you're not? Right. Well, it's the same thing, Lord willing, I'm going to preach along some of these lines this morning. All those complaints that Israel had in the desert. Oh, we don't have any water. You brought us out here to die of thirst. Oh, we don't have anything to eat. You brought us out here to die of hunger. Oh, we're this, that. Whine and complain. Why didn't once, Preston, if you'd have been there, you could have told them, hey, so far, so good. God's done some pretty wonderful things. Remember all those plagues? Thank you. We had back in Egypt, and that's what set us free. You remember going through the Red Sea? They probably hadn't forgotten that. What if we just go ask Moses? Hey, Moses, you know, we could use some water. We're getting kind of hungry. Do you think God would provide something for us? When you approach God, What did Jesus say about that? If you, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will God give good gifts to those who ask him? That's the way it's always been. That didn't start being that way when Jesus said it. Now, this is bad because now I can't say this stuff during the sermon because y'all have already heard it. Or you'll sleep through that part. Oh, I don't know how to take that. I'm not sure. But this is God. He's always providing. He's always had a plan. He's always bringing his plan about. And think about it. His plan is not for him. It's for us. We're the ones in need of God to come up with a plan and to work that plan out. And that's exactly what he's been doing through this whole time. So he calls Abraham, brings out of Abraham a nation when he's as good as dead, as the Holy Spirit said through the prophets. And from that nation comes the Christ. But in the process, what's the nation doing? It's rebelling almost the whole stinking time, which is appropriate because what does the name Israel mean? But he who struggles with God. And so these people who have struggled with God ever since he brought them into existence, that's the nation through whom God's going to bring his son into the world. And how ironically appropriate is that God bring his son into the world through a very rebellious, whiny, crybaby people. I'm sorry, Jews, I don't mean any offense. You're just like the rest of us, really, if you're Jewish and listening to this. The rest of us are the same way, but this is a particular nation that's been singled out and the focus is on them, and we see their sin like no other nation. We see their failings before God, like we see it with no other nation. But what we also see is God bringing them along, and even in the midst of their disobedience and rebellion, he says, all right, I'm going to have to send you off into captivity. I'm going to wipe out your city and your country and send you guys off into captivity. But in 70 years, I'm bringing you back. What? That's unheard of. And that's exactly what God does. And so he brings them back. He doesn't just bring them back. He brings them back. Nehemiah talks about the rebuilding of the wall around Jerusalem. Ezra talks about rebuilding the temple. They rebuilt the temple first, and I thought, maybe you should have built the wall first. No. That's Marty's thinking. That's not God's. So they rebuild the temple. They rebuild the wall. They rebuild everything. The nation is reestablished, and who pays for it? Cyrus pays for it. Willingly. He says, I'm sending you guys back. We'll pay for this. And then the people in the area where it's all being rebuilt start to complain to Cyrus. And so Cyrus says, well, okay, now, so you can pay for it. We'll raise your taxes to pay for the work that these guys are doing that you're complaining about. God knows how to work things out. If we read these things and we see all along the way, God's been bringing his people along, even in spite of their rebelliousness and their sinfulness, what's he going to do for you and me? Now, we read about them and they were horrible people. Well, they're not any worse than we are. It's just that we get to see their history on these pages. Every nation of people is a nation of evil people. And that's why we are so in desperately need of a Savior. And so this 70 weeks, back to what the text says, it's to finish transgressions. Just like you're a parent, you see your children misbehaving, and you say to yourself, I'm going to put a stop to this. Like Barney Fife said, what did Barney Fife say? Nip it in the bud. That's what a good parent does, and that's what God did. I'm going to put an end to this. Put an end to transgressions. I'm going to put an end to sin. And then we're going to atone. We're going to atone for the wickedness. We're going to bring in everlasting righteousness. Now, what does that mean, bring in everlasting righteousness? These visions are of the kingdom that God will establish. What's going to happen in that kingdom? What's God going to do for us? Do you have any righteousness? You don't. I don't. We don't have any righteousness. All our righteousness, like Jeremiah said, what did Jeremiah say? All our righteousness is like filthy rags. Who does have righteousness? God. And when you read what Paul wrote to this church in Rome in Romans chapter 4, what he explains very carefully is what Jesus was talking about the whole time. God is going to confer his righteousness on you and me. What's he going to do that in exchange for? Faith. We put our faith in him. He confers his righteousness on us. What a deal! And it's not for a little while until Marty messes up. It's forever. It's everlasting righteousness. This is what the kingdom of God is all about. These aren't just some little visions about some little time in history. These are visions that God is giving Daniel about the climax of his plan, when everything is going to come together and his kingdom's going to be established and the whole world is going to be saved simply through faith in God's Son, Jesus Christ. He's the anointed one. He's the Messiah. He's the Christ. He's the one who's coming, and he's also going to be cut off. But the irony of the cutting off is that it's the cutting off that we need. God says, I'm sending my son to die. And in his death, what's he going to do to the devil? He's going to strike a blow to his head. That cutting off will be Jesus having his heel bruised. This is Genesis chapter 3, verse 15. You see how it all comes together throughout history, throughout human history. God's been working out his plan to bruise the devil, to save us from our own sin, to bring in everlasting righteousness. And Jesus says, hey guys, I'm going away. John 14. But if I go away, what's he say he's going to do? I'm going to prepare a place for you. And if I prepare a place for you, guess what I'm doing? I'm coming back. I'm coming back. The book of Daniel is not about a bunch of historical junk that happened 2,500, 2,600 years ago. The book of Daniel is about you and me right here today. We are so unimaginably blessed to be part of the kingdom that God's been talking about this whole time. When Isaiah wrote about the mountain of the house of the Lord being established in the tops of the mountains, and the word of the Lord is going to go forth from Jerusalem and all nations are going to flow unto it, he wasn't talking about the law and about Moses. He was talking about the church. And we look at the church and it's just a church. No, it's not just a church. We are the family of God. What's more important to you than your family? And that's the way it is with God. Nothing is more important to God than his family. And this is the story about how he's bringing all this about to make us his family, to put his spirit in us, which is what Jesus said to Nicodemus. Nicodemus, if you're not born again, what are you not going to do? You're not going to see or enter into the kingdom. What were all Jesus' parables about? Parables of the kingdom. That's what God's been working to establish in human terms, a kingdom, something that we could belong to. We have a king who is also our priest, and he's been our prophet, and he is our brother, and he's not ashamed to call us his brother, he says, because it's the absolute truth. These are wonderful things. I don't have words to express how fantastic all this stuff is, but I hope in some way, some shape or form, as you're reading Daniel, like me, you're going, wow, this is really... What would John Denver say? He'd say, it's far out. Words fail. This is good stuff. Anybody got anything as we close? It's time to bring our class to a conclusion. Any observations? Any questions? Good, because I wouldn't know how to answer them. But I don't know, sometimes I'll look at one of those blanks and I forgot to fill in and I go, what was that supposed to be? And I'm thankful that Brandy's here. My goodness, what would I do without you, girl? Lord love you. Class dismissed.